back once again, 314th episode, Parish of the Patriots. It's already another Tuesday. Hope your week got started off good. I'm glad that you're able to join us this week. Well, of course, we're going to have a great discussion. I know the vast majority of you have been here before. It's good to see you back. If it's your first time stopping in, I hope you'll give the whole show. I do ask that you'll try to give the whole show. It's roughly an hour long. You know, I hope you'll get something out of it. I do hope you'll stick with the whole thing. Just stick it through the one time. If you get to the end and be like, that sucks, I'm never listening to that again, I apologize. Well, actually, I don't. You just obviously have poor taste. But stick with it to the end. And hopefully you'll get some, because we do hopefully have some information. We'll talk about things that are interesting. And we're going to laugh. We're going to have some fun. I believe in trying to have fun in everything you do. You know, try to find some sort of laugh or chuckle to find. But stick with it to the end. We do have a Christian-specific segment, a sermon, if you would. That's roughly the halfway point. You may think that's not your thing either. But as I said, stick with it to the end. I don't think it'll be what you expect. And I think you'll get something out of it. There's been times I've had people that were non-believers, right, drop an email and say, you know, the whole Christian thing isn't really my thing. But I do, even then, I still enjoy the Christian-specific segment. So there you go. But I do put it in its own part. So if you just absolutely are demon-possessed or something, you know, and you know, and you can't bear it, I at least am nice and merciful enough to put it in its own section so that your demons don't get all disturbed. Your demons don't get all, no, your demons won't be all uncomfortable. Those evil spirits, those unclean spirits you all nestled up with, you know, you're all cozy with, you've let them all make a home with you. They don't get to feeling awkward, like maybe they're going to get asked to leave. You got a bunch of squatters living in your house with you. And if you listen to the Christian specific segment, your squatters might feel like, you know, you're fixing to ask them to leave. And you don't want your squatters feeling uncomfortable, even though they're shitting in your floor, eating your food, kicking your dog, whatever. You don't want these squatters to feel uncomfortable. That would be rude. You don't want them to feel awkward and uncomfortable. They might want to leave. So you feel uncomfortable on their behalf. So you don't want to listen to it. If that's you, I put it in its own section so you can at least maybe get some lulls or something out of the first half of the show, I guess. Probably not. Anyway, if your unclean spirits aren't too uncomfortable and you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. We got one way. We got one way only. The ultimate privacy coin known as an envelope. We got snail mails right there on the description page for this show on Radio Albion. It is appreciated. It really is. Very humbly. So, very humble. Very humble. Very humbly so. He's right there. You know, I got an email address there. And you're welcome to drop me an email. Don't misunderstand. But you know, look, there's no point in dropping me an email and asking me, you know, hey, how can I, you know, I appreciate the show. How can I send some support? Look, it's right there. That's it. If you can't address an envelope, I don't know what to tell you. It's easier than figuring out cryptocurrency. That's all I can say. That's all I could say. There are crypto addresses on Radio Albion. I've said this before. I'll say it again because people get confused and you may not have heard me say it before. Those are fans from before he went away. You know, if you've already dropped something in there, there's no problem. Someday he'll be able to get to them, I'm sure. But I'm not. I don't have I have zero access to those. I wouldn't want it if it was offered. It's not my money. That's fans. I ain't no damn thief. Anyway, the hell were we doing? Oh, yeah. Listen, I still have that lingering cough. Don't be shy. Pay the tithes. Yeah, there it is. An envelope. Figure it out, folks. It is appreciated. No, it is. It's appreciated. And as I said this before, I understand for those of you who aren't in America, you know, there's varying levels of difficulty getting your hands on U.S. dollars. I get that. You know, it's not like I'm sitting around going, you sorry. You don't put nothing in there. I would be doing this if I didn't do anything. You know, if I took down that and just no support at all, I'd still do this. We'd still have this discussion. As long as somebody's getting something out of it, we're going to continue. I plan to continue doing this. So let's see what we got here. Tony, no note there, but I did want to let you know I got it. And as always, I do appreciate it. No Mr. T this week, Mr. T. I think I may have screwed something up, though, because I can't remember for sure. But I think a week or so ago, I had a double for Mr. T. So that may be where it is. Or you're getting post office and it's just running slow. Maybe it'd be a double. This week. Mr. T is a weekly. So I always expect to see Mr. T in there. But anyway, I don't want Mr. T being like, dang, GPD just ignoring my stuff from now on. That ain't the case. Let's see what we got here. excuse me again. Thank you, GPD. Thank you for putting your message out there on the Parish of the Patriots and your other programs. And I got to stop right there for just a second. Speaking of other programs, which is now just the Monday Daily Nationalist, a.k.a. the Daily Mail Monday. As you know, I discontinued doing the Friday Daily Nationalist show. And one of my intentions, I'm not bragging here, please don't take it that way in any way, shape, or form. One of my intentions here by discontinuing that was to increase the quality of the other two shows. One of the reasons I decided to quit doing the Friday Daily Nationalist is myself, my own perception. I wasn't hearing it from other people. I wasn't getting emails going, you suck. Well, I do kind of sometimes get emails like that, but that wasn't the reason why. I'm pretty much used to that. my own perception, I felt like quality overall across the board was starting to suffer a little bit. I cut off that Friday Daily Nationalist, and I think it's yielded results, if I do say so myself. The Daily Mail Monday, the Monday Daily Nationalist, I think my Monday Daily Nationalist show has definitely gotten way better as a result of not doing the Friday show. You know, taking that break, because obviously I post Matt Johnson's show up, you know, because Sven's not here, somebody's got to post his stuff up. You know, and I'm posting Matt's stuff up and, of course, doing my own shows and doing three shows a week instead of basically one and a half, which was my Parish shows. And then I'd share, you know, co-host with Sven on Fridays. It was just becoming too much. What the hell? What was I doing? Oh, yeah. The other shows. Give the Monday Daily Mail Monday, the Monday Daily Nationalist a listen to. It's gotten better. And we have a lot of fun. A lot more humorous. Anyway, here we are. We're back to our note here. I kind of got off track. Anyway, remember, we're continuing the same note here. Remember, Christ belongs in white Christian politics. Separation of Christ and politics only serves world Jewry in the love of Jesus Christ. And that is from CJ. Thank you very much, CJ. And to be honest, because I'm going to jump off from this, CJ. That's why I saved yours for last here. Because that was the entirety of the listener supporter mailbag. As you can see, I get flooded. It's funny because I have something similar. I already had something similar jotted down to possibly discuss. And I probably should have waited and put this in the Christian specific segment. But what the hell, we're going to do it here. Because I don't care. And it is a good point. Where do we get this idea of, you know, separation of church and state? And how well has that worked out exactly? Now, don't get me wrong. The original idea of separation of church and state. All the founders talked about was not setting up a Church of England in America. Not setting up the Church of America. Overseen by the government. Who would be against that? Can you imagine? A church on par with Obamacare. Good night. Ain't nobody want that. Of course, the various Protestant denominations of the MCC are basically have become the Obamacare of religion. But nevertheless, more to the point here, on a more serious note, you're not incorrect, because here's the thing. There is a difference between having a religion and having a belief. I do. There is a difference. See, a religion is just more of a tradition thing. When somebody says, well, my religion, I'm a Christian. What's your religious affiliation? It's like you belong to a social group. Well, I'm a Christian. You know, I'm a Baptist, Catholic, whatever. There is a real difference between having a religion and having a belief. And it tells you about people. You know, you have people tell you all day long that they're Christian, but you listen to them and they will tell you whether or not they have a belief or whether it's just a religion. Pay attention to what people say. I'm just telling you. You know, I'm not trying to be ugly towards anybody, but listen. When you hear people say things such as, oh, well, we can talk about, I think we should talk about, we can have a discussion about these religious matters after we restore our white homelands. They got a religion. It's not a belief. If you have a belief, you understand that that belief applies to every aspect of your life. It doesn't mean you go around browbeating people with your beliefs. It's not what I'm talking about. But if you truly believe something, then you can't exclude that belief and not apply it to other aspects of the world around you of your life. The belief is relevant because it's the foundation of the way you view the world. I've said this before, and I'll say this again. When you look at this clown world shit show that we live in the world around us, if you don't understand the spiritual aspect of this, if you don't understand, you won't truly understand what is going on. What is going on? If you don't understand the starting point of this is a continuation of the spiritual warfare that you can go back all the way to the book of Genesis and read recorded history of. If you don't understand that, I'm telling you, you're never going to truly understand the world around you. You can sit there and say, the Jews. That's all fine and well. But then you're going to run into people who are going to point out, well, where did they have their secret meetings, you know, to conspire over hundreds, even thousands of years to, get to where they're at here. Where is their secret? Who's the one in charge that's been coordinating this over centuries? And you're not going to have an answer for that because, you look at the world today and you look back at the past and the decisions, the things that were put into place to continually bring things downhill to where we're at now. And I'm sorry, the Jews isn't going to cover it because you can't explain it with just that. You can't. And it's just people just reflex, you know, the Jews. You're obviously missing some details because there's obviously a more central figure that has coordinated this over generations and generations and generations and generations. That makes sense. You know, they don't have a Borg hive mind. They don't. And that's what would be required here. You know, from the Star Trek, we are the Borg. You know, they don't have that. That was what would be required for you to have this continual moving of global society, as it were, the way things are in this world to where we're at now over centuries. There's obviously a central planning force. And if you have a belief, you understand what that force is. It's Satan. I'll say it is Satan. That explains all of it. Then you get into the layers and you can talk about, you know, the different layers that are involved here. But if you don't understand the spiritual aspect, it won't make sense. I'm sorry, it's just not. And that's one of those hard things to put out there. Because this is one of those things you could take flack from both sides. One side's going to say, you see, you're just letting the Jews off the hook. That's how you Christian, that's how you Christians always are. You're just letting the Jews off the hook. And then on the other hand, of course, you're going to get bombarded with anti-Semitism. You're being an anti-Semite. You're getting flack from both sides. No, there's no, sometimes with the truth, there just ain't no winning. Not with the world around us. Gonna get accused of making excuses for the Jews and gonna get accused of anti-Semitism. Most people probably aren't even gonna get the point, but anyway. Now, you're good point. Good point. Yeah, absolutely. Because the difference, my friend, is between having a religion and having a belief. And if you believe something, it applies to every aspect. Like I said, I'm not talking about going around and preaching at people all the time, because I don't do that. You may think I do, but I don't. Trust me. You know, I'm not talking about going around beating people over the head with your beliefs. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about in your life, applying your beliefs on a consistent basis. That's a belief. A religion is something you go and spend an hour sleeping through church on Sundays. That's a religion. It's a box you check off on some damn government form or something. That's a religion. It's something you do at weddings. It's something you do at funerals. And it's something you do maybe twice a year on Sunday or something. That's a religion. A belief is something you apply every single day of your life. And again, when people tell you they're Christian and you watch and see how they whether they're actually applying a belief or whether they're just checking a box off on religious affiliation, you understand. Anyway, good stuff. We're going to keep moving because my brain melted. You probably can tell. My brain melted earlier this week. You know, I'm not bragging. Well, we've got good content here on Radio Albion. You know, I do my best. I'm humble about it. I do my best here. But I put a lot of work in, you know, as far as trying to learn and understand. My aspect here is I just try to share things that I'm learning with y'all, whether it's in the Christian specific segment or this part or Daily Night, whatever. And then we have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, who is our definite, you know, our academic here, who, you know, is smart and well-learned and well-versed. And he's, you know, read so much. He knows so much history and things. Get good information. If you listen to Radio Albion, you're getting some good stuff. We're not getting as much good stuff as we had before because obviously it's just me and Matt here, you know, in Sven's absence. But you get what I'm saying. And it amazes me when you go, wow. And I jotted it down here, and I like the term intellectual idiocy. It amazes me when I read people, published people, you know, on platforms wider than this one. And they're saying things, and I don't know how else to describe these things except as intellectual idiocy. It's because I read a lot of different stuff. I read y'all probably imagine I just probably sit around and read, you know, just the same old. I read a wide range of viewpoints, some of which I agree with, some of which I'm half and half. Some of it, there's people I read that I might read three articles by them and be like, yeah, that's pretty good. And then the fourth one I read, I'm like, this guy has no clue on this subject matter. That's just dealing with people. You can tell when somebody is in a subject matter that they're familiar with and when they step out of their zone into something that they don't have a damn clue. You know, I mean, it just is what it is. The stuff they're right on is it's fine. That's just, you know, nobody's perfect. But I was reading several different pieces this week, and I'm not naming the articles because I'm not going to read from the articles. It's just I just want to talk about some of this intellectual idiocy that will pop up, because it's not to any one particular writer, because you will see this everywhere. In more so in normie conservative circles, but you'll see it if you look at it. I was reading a piece, for instance, the other day this, and as we go through this, you'll understand why my brain melted going through this. And you have some sympathy for me because I do these things as a part of, as a part of sharing content with you here. I was reading an article the other day going on about Trump, you know, and the person made the point. They said that they made a statement along this lines, which you've heard 100 times from 100 different people. My constitution is a contract between the government and the people. Always be really wary when people make a hard authoritative statement. Look at that stuff. No matter what, and I say this in the Christian specific segment, and it applies everywhere. The truth, Jesus was the way, the truth, and the life. I'm not preaching early. Hear me out here. Way, the truth, and the life. The truth being the center word. The truth is, you want to seek the truth no matter what the topic, you know, because it is related to Christ. The truth is going to get you through this stuff. Always look for the truth. When somebody makes an authoritative statement like that, the Constitution is a contract between the government and the people. I do not know how many times I've seen somebody regurgitate that nonsense. No, it's not. No, it's not. I read this, and again, it's not like it's the first time I saw somebody write this. It is standard boilerplate, normie conservative horseshit. The Constitution is a contract between the government and the people. No, it's not. That is an authoritative statement, and it's 100% just on its face a bald-faced lie. Did you sign my Constitution? Because I sure as hell didn't. You don't want to know what the Constitution is? It's a piece of paper sitting under a glass in the museum. That's what it is. The Constitution, Americans have a hard time with this, and normie conservatives especially so, and libertarians also. They have a hard time with this. Let me tell you something. The Constitution is no different than international law. You know, I always love when these people appeal to, that's in violation of international law. Okay. I guess international law can invade whoever's in violation of it and bomb them to oblivion and bring them to justice. Oh, wait. No, they can't. How many times, if the Constitution is a contract between the government and the people, the government has definitely been in violation of that contract countless times. So is the government going to get arrested? Who's going to arrest them? The government's going to arrest themselves for being in violation of this contract. Intellectual idiocy. And that's not the only example. You got, here's a dead giveaway when you're reading something, because it's beat to death. It's not that it's irrelevant. It's just that it's been beaten to death. And I see it as a sign that you're dealing with a midwit. And to be clear, I'm not a genius. I'm not. If you looked at the IQ scale, I don't know. I'm probably in the high end of midwittery, but I'm not a genius IQ. I know I'm not. And I have no problem with that. I'm fine with what I am. When I talk about midwits, when we talk about midwits, we're talking about those arrogant assholes that think they are geniuses. And they're midwits. Anyway, the horse has been beat to death, and I wish they would stop. And again, I always see it as a sign of midwittery because they think they're being really clever. Can we please, for the sake of all that's good and beautiful in this world, stop bringing up George Orwell and, for goodness sakes, 1984. I am so sick of it. You know, we get the comparison, okay? When somebody is publishing an article or whatever, And they whip out George Orwell in 1984 and act as though they're laying something on you that you've never heard of before. They think they're being really smart. Oh, this is, well, let me tell you, it's just like in 1984. I can pretty much stop reading right there. You're not sharing anything profound. Yes, we know of the work. You know, you ever notice that? They throw out George Orwell in 1984 like you ain't never heard of that shit. Trust me, we've heard of it, okay, midwit? And again, look, we're all mostly midwits here. That's what we're talking about. You know, there's only a handful of really smart, genius people here. We're talking about these people that are midwits that think they're super geniuses. And they whip out George Orwell 1984 on you like you ain't never heard of that. Trust us, we've heard, trust me, we've heard of it. You might think you're laying something profound on us, but we're not. You're not, rather. I mean, we get it. Yeah, I'm talking about, you don't have to be a genius. The truth, what I wanted to say, and I kind of got off from it because my brain got a little cloudy there for a second. It happens because I'm not a super genius. You don't have to be a genius. You don't. Look, to understand these things, you don't have to be a genius. This is great news. I got great news for you. You don't have to be a genius. You don't have to be a super genius. All you got to do is look for the truth. If you get into the habit of parsing things and looking for the truth, you'll look like a genius. Look what I do. People will be like, you're so smart. And I'm not. I'm really, honest to goodness, I'm not that. I mean, no, I'm not a moron either. The secret, I'm not a genius. You don't have to be. You can do the same thing. Just get in the habit of looking for truth. Because when you do, there are telltale things that people will say. And you'll start red flagging those automatically in your mind. You'll start looking for them because they're telltale signs. I referenced it before. The Constitution is a contract. When somebody makes a blanket authoritative statement that's obviously set up to where you're not supposed to question it, and you're supposed to work out from the rest of their arguments from that starting point, you'll recognize that they're probably fixing to lay a big line of bullshit on you. In the case of where I read this statement, they went on. It was basically, please get back to playing by the rules. Donald Trump is getting out of line and he's not playing by the rules. And they made this other statement in this article. They said, how did they put it? And it was another one of those authoritative statements that you're not supposed to question. It's just stated as though it's authoritative fact. And it was, and I'm doing off the top of my head. It says, we have to remember that how we go about things is just as important as why we go about things. And again, that's bullshit. No, it's not. This was an appeal. The whole article wound up being an appeal to, it's important that we play by the rules. This is why conservatives never win, by the way. You know, they don't. Because the left doesn't give a shit about the rules. They whip out the rules. This is like international law or the Constitution. They whip those things out if they think you might actually gain a few yards on the field. If they think you might actually be in danger of gaining some ground against them, they'll whip the rules out and tell you, well, you don't want to be a hypocrite. You better follow these rules. And the conservatives all fall in line and say, well, it's more important that we follow the rules than if we win. And then, of course, the left just ignores the rules and does whatever the hell they want. And everybody goes, he's winning. Well, because your dumb ass won't look around and go, wow, maybe if the other side isn't using the rules, maybe we're being a bunch of idiots because we're trying to play by some imaginary rules that, again, like international law, don't actually exist. If you seek the truth, you'll spy this stuff. You will. You'll spy it early on. And you'll know when you get that blanket statement of authority that has no actual basis in truth, you'll know you're fixing to read a line of bullshit. I had some other stuff jotted down. What else? Oh, God. I was reading a different article and somebody was talking about, I don't remember. I think they were talking about the tariffs or something. And they actually referenced the market, you know, talking about the economy. the market. Libertarians do this the worst. They will talk about the market. You know, an example would be Trump's tariffs are bad because the market. Or they'll say the free market. There are no markets. There hadn't been markets. There hadn't been markets in a long time. What are you talking about markets? I love when people talk about economics. And they talk about the market as if it exists. You live in an oligarchy. You live in a, I don't know, hyper oligarchy. I read a deal the other day. You know, Trump's been, here's an example of what I mean. You know, Trump's been talking all this shit about, you know, America's taking back the Panama Canal. We gave it away to Panama and they just turned around and gave it to China. They gave it to China and we're taking it back. America is taking back the Panama Canal. And the average person hears that and they think what? The army is going to land at the Panama Canal and the U.S. military or the Army Corps of Engineers will be running the Panama Canal. Well, it turns out that Donald Trump explained what that means. It means they're going to force the Chinese company that's managing the Panama Canal out. And guess who is going to be running it instead? BlackRock. BlackRock is going to take control of the Panama Canal from China. And that means America's winning. My Trump imitations aren't that great, I know. Bear with me. I do a better Bill Clinton, but I don't get much opportunity to do Bill. BlackRock is going to be running the Panama Canal and you just look at all this winning. America's back. So the government is trying to force out the China company that's managing it so BlackRock can manage it. And that's winning. That's the market. I laugh when people talk about the market. You know, all this because there's a lot of talk about that right now because of these tariffs. Tariffs. Prices are going to go up and they might. You know, look, y'all know I ain't a part of the Trump cult. You know, if we get something good, I'm all about it. But I he's not a messianic figure. He's not a second coming of Christ or anything like that. I just see things for what they are. But there's all this talk. And people are talking about, you know, these tariffs. And you think you got inflation now. What with these tariffs? And they missed the point. Because a lot of these people weren't around when all this stuff was put into place. I was. Some of you were, and you're going to sit there and nod your head. Because you remember all the lies they told us back then, right? They were going to move these jobs overseas, but it's okay. I mean, sure, you'll be unemployed now. But you're going to get a mythical better job that's never actually going to appear. And you're going to have more money because everything's going to be half the price. They sold it to us on the Walmart model. In case you don't understand what the Walmart model was, Walmart destroyed rural American towns, small town America. Well, you go down through these small towns that are just total shitholes. They just look like one big meth lab. And you wonder why that is. When you're heading out of town and you see that big, gosh awful looking Walmart on the edge of town, that's why. Walmart would go into the Walmart plant. They would go into these small towns and sell everything below cost at a loss. Long enough to drive all of the locally owned stores out of business. Then when the locally owned stores were out of business, they raised their prices back up and profited because there's no competition now. You only have Walmart. They did the same thing. They say, oh, you can get everything cheap. You can save all of this money. In reality, they pocketed the difference. They cut their labor costs, yes. But they pocketed the difference. They didn't drop the price. I mean, they kind of did at first. And they do on certain things at certain times. But they're pushing up. They used it to push up their profit margins. They didn't. There is no market. They just cut the labor out and pocketed the difference and charged you the same price. There's your free market. You know, we know that all these millions of people lost so much wealth so much of their meager wealth during the COVID scam. And yet we also know that all these billionaires gained billions of dollars in wealth during the COVID scam. And yet you'll still have people sit there and talk about the market is not going to like this. There is no market. There is no invisible hand moving the market. You live in an oligarchy. You live in a corporate, whatever term you want to use. It damn sure ain't no free market. And I got to keep moving. I got to get this done because we got to get into the Christian specifics here. But I had one more. Because again, it's another one of those just intellectual idiocy things that you will read on a fairly regular basis. And that is some version of, oh my gosh, I just realized something's wrong in this country. Like, yeah, where the hell have you been for the last at least two or three decades? I read an article the other day. I don't even remember what the topic was, but it was basically, oh my gosh, you know what? This country, there's something wrong. And of course, these people, because they just now, for some reason, I don't know where the hell they've been. They just now suddenly realize that something may be amiss. Something might be amiss. These people will inevitably have this idea of, well, we got to do whatever we got to do to repair this so the country starts working again. When I was thinking of this the other day, I had a story. This is from years ago. And there was a guy. This is an actual story. I'm not making this up. Because I saw the evidence of it. This guy showed this to me. And this guy's wife, this was a younger guy and his younger wife, and she was driving their vehicle. And one day she calls him up in a panic. She says, I almost had a wreck. She says, I went to put the brakes on and they didn't work. The pedal went to the floor and I almost crashed. So, without warning. So her husband goes out there to see what the hell's going on. Long story short, the front brake pads had wore out, and she continued to grind metal on metal. I shit you not, to the point to where the brake rotor completely ate both faces off. And then she continued using the vehicle, and they continued to grind. All that was left were the little fins that go between the brake. If you don't mess with these things, you're not going to understand. But most of you, I assume, do. It continued to eat through the fins. That was all that was left, were the fins. And I saw this when her husband in disbelief, brought these and showed these things. Look what my wife did. Finally, the pistons in the caliper came out far enough. They puked out. All the brake fluid ran out and the brakes failed. And you know what his wife said? He's like, how did you not know? She said, it never made a noise. I don't know. They've been working fine all this time. This just happened all of a sudden. It's like, bitch, there's no way this just happened all of a sudden. You've been grinding metal on metal for months, at least weeks. You ground the brake pads off, ground through the both faces on the rotor and through the fins in the middle. And finally, they just puked the pistons out of the caliper and all the brake fluid came out. I don't know. It just happened all of a sudden. That's how these people are. They don't notice that the country's been grinding the brake pads through the rotor faces for decades. Now, all of a sudden, the pistons are coming out, the brake fluid's run off, and they're like, oh my gosh, I just realized something is going on. This is just like 1984, George Orwell. It makes my brain hurt. This intellectual idiocy. And people get published with this crap, you know? They do. They get published. It's just, and they think it's breathtaking. You can tell these people think they're saying something. I just realized I woke up this morning and my gosh, what's going on with America? I don't know. The engine just started making a funny noise. Sir, there's a rod hanging out of the side of your engine block. I think we're beyond. It needs a tune-up. Anyway, we're going to run long today. I can tell it because we got a Christian-specific segment to get into, and I wound up having so much fun with this discussion. We're having so much a good time. We're running long. We got to keep moving, y'all. You know what to do. Get in there, fill those pieces. Let's get to it. Let's get to this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. I was speaking with somebody recently, and the topic of pride came up, specifically the topic of pride is defined as sinful, sinful pride in the biblical context. And I realized, you know, I got to thinking about it, and this is one of those, another one of those things that I think gets really wide, broadly misunderstood, even among Christian believers, of what constitutes sinful pride. It's sort of like we talked, it's been some time back, we had a discussion on this show about what it means to fear the Lord, you know, and how that doesn't equate to you're supposed to just be constantly terrified about God is going to drop the hammer on you or something. Likewise, sinful pride, what does it mean for pride to become? How does pride equal a sin? What are we talking about? And what I think gets lost in translation, as it were, is, for instance, you've got a project. I don't know about you. I figure most of you do, myself included. You know, we'll have projects, things we're working on, things we're building, or things we're remodeling, or you know, things we're cleaning up, repainting, whatever. And you've got a project, and you put your blood, sweat, and tears into this project. And when it's done, it comes out really nice, and it works. And you look at that, and you get a sense of pride in that. You know, you get a sense of accomplishment. You look at that and you did it. You know, you put all this work and effort and you had to learn some things, but you got it done and you take pride in your work. Is that somehow a sin? Well, if you look at it as a reference, if you look in the book of Genesis, when God created this place for us, the earth and everything in it, when he created this realm of time for us, and when he got done, he looked and he said, that's good. You know, this is good. You see that the Lord looked at it and said, it's complete. This is good. You know, well, we know that there's no sin in the Lord. So what constitutes sinful? When have you crossed the line? I think the easiest way to break this down and understand it is to take the word pride and better understand it as arrogance. See, this is more, this narrows things down. You know, this hones in. Pride's such a broad term. Again, if you do a job well done and you look at it and you're proud of doing good work, that's not a sin. I mean, come on, the Lord looked at what he created and he was happy with what he did. And we know there's no sin exists in the Lord. So obviously that's not a sin. So what constitutes sinful pride? And I think it's easiest to understand as arrogance. And we're going to get into it some more. Why? Why does this constitute pride? One of the things I find amazing, the more time you spend, the more years of your life you spend reading the Bible, understanding the Bible. This is why I say time and time again, it's fine for new believers. If you're new believers, yes, for stick with the New Testament. Read the New Testament if you're a new believer, because that's where you're going to really find what you need. But as you mature, you've got to, at some point, start going through the Old Testament. And it's not going to all come together for you for a while. But if you continue to work at that, you will be rewarded. Because there's no way you can truly understand the whole of the Bible unless you read the whole of the Bible. I always say it's like, if somebody presented a really good story to you and just had you read the last little bit of the story, the climax of the story, as it were, and you would say, well, that's really good, but you really wouldn't get all the backdrop. You know, you wouldn't understand characters being referenced because you haven't read that part. Makes it that much more laughable when mockers and unbelievers will sit here and read one little line out of this massive book, this massive tome, and act as though, oh, they understand it. you know, and when you try to explain it in context, they hand wave at you and say, oh, you're just trying to make it sound what you say, what you want it to say, which is silly. You've got to read the whole book to understand the context of what's being said in any given particular part of the book. Anyway, one of the things you find amazing as you do this is the interconnectivity of what's being said. You know, everything is, you find so many things that appear to be unrelated. And as you gain it and understanding of it, you come to realize that so many things are interconnected and you can relate it back to another part. This will make sense as we go along, I think. For instance, we know as Christian believers, what are we supposed to do? We talk about this every week because this is understanding God's will for all of us. And as we mature and grow and get ready for the life to come, that is the mission, the overall mission. And we have to be able to grow. This is interrelated and connected to with other parts of the Bible where we're told what? Wisdom and understanding. We should gain wisdom and understanding. This is especially referenced in the Old Testament. A man should gain wisdom. A man should gain understanding. Wisdom is more valuable than gold and silver. Wisdom is like a fine pearl. And things such as this. We're supposed to find wisdom, understanding. And this is related to as we gain in knowledge of the Lord in this mission he has given us in Christ completing God's intention from the beginning. As we gain knowledge and understanding of the Lord and spiritually grow, what are we gaining? Also, we're gaining wisdom and understanding. For what is wisdom and understanding if it is not coming to know the Lord and his plans and what he is doing and understanding the world around us? You see, that all makes sense. Now, to gain wisdom, that means you didn't have it before. Now, regardless of the topic or the subject matter of hand, if you're gaining wisdom in a particular matter, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. It means you gain an understanding of whatever that topic or that subject matter is, whether it's of a godly religious nature or just how the world works around you or what people are doing, whatever. It doesn't matter. The point is, you gain wisdom and understanding regarding this. Now, more than likely, before you gain that wisdom, you weren't just oblivious to the subject matter at hand. You weren't just oblivious to the topic at hand. In other words, more than likely, you had some view as to that matter. You had an idea. You thought you understood it, at least to a certain extent. You had an outline in your head of how you thought this was, what the truth was about this, how it worked, whatever the case may be. You had an idea, but you were wrong. You were incorrect, but you had an idea. Now, if you have a view, an idea about something, and you were to gain, if you were to gain wisdom and understanding, you are going to have to be able, and here we're going to get to the heart of the matter, you're going to have to be able to discard the idea you held previously. That just makes sense. I'm trying to think of an example. If you think the modern nation state of Israel is the same Israel that's written about in the Old Testament, and that's your view, and sadly that's what many people think, and then you read and you study and you come to understand that just because they're calling it that now doesn't mean it's the same thing as before. It's by every metric something completely different. So what do you have to do? You have to take that idea you had before, modern Israel equals Israel of the Bible, and to gain the new understanding, you have to let go. You can't hold two separate conflicting views at the same time, right? There's no way you can do that. It would be cognitive dissonance on steroids. You have to be able to say, oh, I was incorrect about that. And you have to discard the incorrect idea because now you have new information. And always remember, don't feel bad. There's nothing shameful about being ignorant about things, because we're all ignorant. I'm not some super genius. Trust me. We're all ignorant about something. That's the whole thing. That's what gives us room to grow. Where do you read about Jesus walking around with his disciples? And, you know, they display, there's such honesty in the story, in the telling of it, and relaying these events. Because one of the things that's really striking is how ignorant they are. You know, I mean, when you get into after Christ's crucifixion and resurrection, you know, you read the epistles, you read the letters, you read the writings of the apostles, they seem like completely different people, don't they? You know what? You read, like, for instance, you're reading the first or second or whatever epistle of you know, Peter. But then when you're reading in the Gospels, you know, and it's like, it's a different person. If you didn't know anybody, you'd think this was a completely different person than what you're reading about in the Gospels, because in the Gospels, it seems ignorant. All the apostles seem, they arguing about who's going to have a higher position, and, you know, they're doing things from a worldly standpoint. Well, they seem ignorant in the Gospels because they were. I mean, they were literally ignorant. That's not stupid. They're not dumb. You know, Christ wasn't recruiting morons to be his disciples. They were just ignorant. They seem, when you move forward, you know, they seem like different people afterwards, because in a sense they were, but they gained wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. And it works. It worked for them. It will work for you. There's nothing shameful about being ignorant. It could be cringe, you know, and it's that way for all of us. I can look back on views I had in previous times in my life, and you know, the way I thought I understood the Bible, and I didn't understand a damn thing, but I thought I did. And it's cringe. It's like if somebody brings up cringy stuff you did in eighth grade or something, you know, it's cringy. But give yourself a break. There's nothing wrong with being ignorant. An infant is ignorant. An infant that is born into this world doesn't know anything. They have to learn how to walk. They have to learn how to talk. At some point in time, they have to learn not to crap their pants. They have to learn everything because they're ignorant about everything. And yet, that infant can grow up to be a super genius, you know, or to be a very wise man. But you see, it's a process, right? You see some super wise person. I can, trust me, they weren't born that way. They didn't pop out of the womb and start spouting pearls of wisdom. We know we have to gain wisdom and understanding. And this is directly related to our mission, the reason God created this whole thing, so that we could grow and come to understand him. But again, to do that, you're going to have the ability to discard your incorrect ideas, because you can't hold the two views. They're in contradiction to one another. There are people, and I know you know of them, you have known them, you probably are interacting with some even today, that they will never admit that they're wrong about anything. You know, you can show them 100% evidence. You know what I mean? Here it is. And it don't matter. They'll still argue with you till the sun goes down, no matter how plain you put it up in their face. They will never, ever admit they're wrong. And sometimes, some of these people, and you know how they are, you ever had somebody, like, you know, and this is generally going to be IRL people you know in your life, you know, co-workers, whatever. You ever have somebody, and it's like you're going back and forth about something, you're explaining it to them, maybe something about your job, it doesn't matter what the topic is, maybe something about your job, whatever, and that person will not, even though you're showing them plain as day, This is how it is. And they will not admit it. They will sit there and just act like you're wrong. Because they're not about to admit they're wrong. And then, like a week later, you walk by a room and they're talking to somebody else. And they're telling somebody else that very point you were explaining to them that they refused to admit. And they're acting like they came up with this and they're so smart. I mean, I guess it doesn't matter as long as they eventually come around to what is correct, but it kind of chaps your ass, doesn't it? That person stood there and argued with you for an hour about there's no way you could be right. And then like a week later, you overhear them telling somebody exactly what you were explaining to their dumb ass. And they acting like, oh yeah, let me tell you how this is. Like it's their idea. And they ain't about to say, oh yeah, you know, so-and-so corrected me on this. Let me tell you. Don't ever get no credit. It's a part of our humility. We have to be able to accept when nobody's going to give us credit. It doesn't matter because God's going to give us credit. They ain't going to give you no credit. They acted like it's their idea. They done come up with that on their own. Oh yeah, let me tell you about that, John. And they just word for word regurgitating what you told them. There are people that will never admit they're wrong about anything. They just won't. Period. A person such as that is incapable of gaining wisdom and understanding because they can't discard the incorrect ideas they have now because that would be an admission that they're wrong about something. And hell will freeze over before that person is ever going to admit. Now we're getting to sinful pride and why it's a sin. It has nothing to do with, oh, wow, look, I built this cabinet and it came out really nice. I take pride in that. You know, God isn't standing there with the hammer fixing to slap you down, you sinful POS, you know. No, I mean, that's not what we're talking about. You see, it's closer. It's more akin to arrogance. It's thinking so much of yourself that there's no way in hell you could ever be wrong about anything. Again, we're instructed to seek wisdom and understanding. You can't do it if you're not able to admit you're wrong. Well, you know everything already. And this translates over because if you have that attitude about worldly things, you're going to have that attitude about spiritual things. If you're the type of person that can't be wrong about any subject matter pertaining to this world around us, then I can virtually guarantee you're going to be the type of person that's never going to admit you're wrong about spiritual matters either. And guess what? Where you are right now is where you're going to be 20 years from now, is where you're going to be 40 years from now. You ever know that? And it's pathetic. Have you ever known some of those people as you get older, like me? Have you ever known some of those people that never got over high school? You know, they were really popular, and this applied to men or women. They were really popular in high school. They were the homecoming queen. They were the football star quarterback, and they were, it was the peak of their life. And they never moved on. They never grew from there. You're 50 years old, and maybe you go to your high school reunion for some reason. I don't know why you would, but a lot of people do. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. It's not my thing. But, and you know, all these people sit around and talk about crap that happened all these decades ago back in high school. And the star quarterback dude who's now just balding and looks like a typical balding, kind of getting fat middle-aged man is still going on. Like, it was the peak of existence. They can't move on. They don't grow. You see, you don't want to be stunted in your spiritual growth. You have to be able to grow. You have to be able to move on to the next thing. Imagine if the apostles had never grown from where they were. Because again, there's nothing wrong with being ignorant. Imagine if the apostles had ever grown from where they were when we read about Jesus instructing them in the Gospels, when they didn't know anything. We wouldn't have their writings afterwards, would we? They had to be able to accept instruction They had to be able to sit there and go, oh, wow, I understand now. We're supposed to, these things are going to transfer on all levels. In other words, the truth is the truth. If you cannot accept the truth, now I'm not saying take, obviously we're not saying take anything people throw at you and tell you, you know, in blind faith. You got to make sure that what somebody's telling you is correct. That's what we're talking about here. But when something is obviously correct and you look into it and yeah, it's verified that that's right. If you are unable to shift and adopt that in those things, you're not going to be able to do it on the spiritual thing. In other words, if you cannot accept correction from a man that you can interact with and speak with, you're not going to be able to accept correction from the Holy Spirit. Now, you sit there, well, if I hear from God, well, guess what? God's not going to come down and have a personal one-on-one with you. You know, you're getting the information. You're getting the truth. You can inspect it and see that that is the truth. And if you're so full of pride and arrogance, you're still not going to listen to it. Well, God is supposed to just, you're so important, you're the center of the universe, that God's got to stop everything he's doing and come instruct your ass. Because you're so special. God's got to stop everything that's going on for you. And then you probably wouldn't listen anyway because there's still no way you could be wrong. This gets to the heart of what it means to have sinful pride. This gets to the heart of matter. You can't gain wisdom because you can never be wrong. If you can't learn and understand on things around you in this world, let me tell you, you're not going to learn and understand and adapt to things that God tells you. You're not going to learn and understand and adapt and grow when it concerns spiritual things. You're not going to hear anything from the Holy Spirit because the Holy Spirit ain't going to. Let me tell you, God doesn't waste his time. Holy Spirit, God's not going to waste his time. He knows what's in your heart. He knows if you're so full of pride and arrogance, you're going to listen to him anyway. You're going to waste his breath. There's something of the Lord I can relate to. I'm saying I'm like that. Well, as soon as I don't mind explaining things to people, you know, I don't mind explaining things to people. But when it becomes, the minute it becomes clear they're not actually listening to anything I say and they're wasting my time, I'm done. You know, if somebody's honestly trying to understand, I do my best to have patience. But let me tell you something. The minute it becomes clear they're not listening to anything I say, you know, when the next day they come back and act like the hour you spent yesterday explaining something never happened and we're starting all over, I'm done. You're going to get the, well, I don't know, whatever you think. Well, it ain't that I don't know. It's just, that's a polite way of saying I'm done wasting my time with you. You know, if you want to know, I'll explain something. If somebody wants to know, I'll explain it. But the minute that it's abundantly clear, you're just wasting my time. You're not actually listening to anything. You're just killing time debating, trying to turn this into a debate or something. I'm done. And God isn't even going to start. If you're going to waste God's time, you're never going to get anywhere because he already knows. He ain't going to waste his time with you. If you're full of pride and arrogance, he knows what's in your heart. If you're full of pride and arrogance and actually anything the Holy Spirit tells you, you're not going to listen to it because heaven forbid that would mean you were wrong about something. You ain't even going to hear nothing. I'm telling you, you ain't. God ain't got time for you. You know, waste his breath entertaining you, convincing you. Not going to happen. I'm just telling you. And you're going to get nowhere. And you're going to wind up, the years will go by. Because everything we do, everything we encounter is always in that backdrop of time. Every day that goes by is done. Every year that goes by is done. And trust me, they pile up behind you really, really fast. And you're not getting them back. And each day that goes by means you've got fewer in front of you to work with for learning and understanding. And if you're incapable of learning and understanding, you're literally a waste of air. You're a waste of space. I'm not trying to be ugly. I'm saying you're not doing anything. Why are you here? If you're not learning, growing, and understanding, gaining wisdom and understanding, and spiritually maturing, then really, what the hell are you doing here? You're just waiting to die, essentially. Just going through these pointless motions in this world and just spending your time frivolously. What are you even doing? What's the point? You know? Anyway. Yeah. Sinful pride. Don't do it. It doesn't. You know, get in the habit of being able to admit you're wrong. You know? I mean, don't. I'm not saying be a groveler or something. I mean, make if you're actually wrong. If you apply this to other aspects of your life. Have you ever had a job? I had a job one time, believe it or not. I had a job one time. And I guarantee virtually all of you have been here to where everyone you work with is always, nothing is ever their fault. You know, like if the boss calls them out on something and, you know, it's always somebody else's fault. They're always deflecting. It's always this. As well, they've got an excuse. And you're that one guy that when if you screw something up and the boss comes to you and says, hey, did you screw this up? And you can tell, you see the look on their face that they're expecting, you can see it. They're waiting to see what your excuse is going to be. And you're like, oh, yeah, I screwed that up. And they're shocked. Try it out if you haven't. I recommend it. Own your mistakes. You will be shocked. Let's continue to use your job as an example. If it's your job, if you're surrounded by people, and people being people, you probably are. If you're surrounded by people who are constantly, nothing's their fault, and if the boss comes to them and asks them if they screwed it up, no, it wasn't me, it must have been so-and-so, and you know it was them. He knows it was them, and they're just lying. And this is the atmosphere at your job. If you screwed something up, look at your boss and say, yeah, I screwed it up. Hopefully you have an actual honest reason why you did. But I mean, just say, yeah, I did that. I totally did that. And look how surprised they are. And I'm going to tell you what, it's going to pay off for you in dividends. Because guess what? Down the road, when you make it a habit of owning your mistakes, down the road, when one of your shithead coworkers tries to lie and throw you under the bus, and the boss comes to you and says, hey, did you do this, that, or the other? He won't name the employee, of course, but you know what's up. And you look at him and say, yeah, no, I didn't. You know, and that's the truth, obviously, don't lie. You know, and you say, no, I don't know anything about it. Guess what? Who's he going to believe? This guy over here that he knows always has an excuse, or you, the one guy that works at your job that he can go to and ask, and if you screwed it up, you'll tell him right up. You tell him while laughing, yeah, I screwed that up. Totally did that. Now, I mean, I didn't do it intentionally. I mean, you know, but yeah, that was me. I did that. When it comes down to it, you're going to have more credibility than anybody in your workplace. Because your boss understands, the management, whatever, they understand that you won't bullshit them. You don't have a problem owning your mistakes. So when your low-tier coworkers try to use you as an excuse to cover up their own inadequacies, or they just flat make shit up about you, and the boss comes to you and you're like, yeah, no, I don't know anything. I literally have no idea what you're talking about. It's not, well, this person says something else, so I don't know. No, he knows. Because you have a track record of being truthful and saying, yeah, no, owning your mistakes and moving on. And when you do screw something up, it's so refreshing that you don't lie and try to cover it up that you will get, trust me, you can take this to the bank. I'm sharing some wisdom with you here, folks. You will get less ash chewing for your actual mistakes. You will, because it's so refreshing to your boss that he doesn't have to listen to a 15-minute spiel of bullshit of how it's not your fault first that wears him out. That when you just, yeah, I did that. I mean, I wasn't doing it maliciously, but yeah, I made a mistake. I can assure you with almost complete certainty, unless your boss is just an unmitigated asshole, I can virtually guarantee you that you are going to get less ass chewings at work. You know, just because it's so refreshing that he doesn't have to beat it into you that you screwed up because you just admitted. I mean, what's the point of going on about it? You know, if he asks you if you screwed it up and you say, yeah, I did, then there's really not much point in chewing you out for it. The people are going to get chewed out are the ones that don't want to admit they did anything wrong, right? I'm kind of off track, I guess, with that. But it's a practical application of what we've discussed here. When you get in the habit, the point is, when you get into the habit of owning your mistakes, it's a good habit to be in. You'll find people around you relate to you differently. You have credibility, and the same applies to God. When you own your mistake and you get in this habit where you can admit you're wrong and you're not going to repeat the mistake because you understand why you made it, you're able to spiritually, it applies across the board in the world around you, at your workplace or whatever, and also in your spiritual life. You see, if you have no problem admitting remember we started off talking about if you can't admit you're wrong to men, you're not going to do it to the Holy Spirit. Now, the flip side of that is true. If you got no problem admitting your mistakes to your boss, you're not going to have a problem admitting your mistakes to God. And you're going to be what? You're going to be more open to instruction from the Holy Spirit. You're going to be able to remove the incorrect information out of the basket of knowledge that you have and replace it with the good fruit of knowledge and understanding in the basket of ideas and viewpoints that you have. Does that make sense? You have to take out the rotten fruit and put the good fruit in. If you're not, you're just going to have a basket full of rotten ideas, basket full of rotten fruit, and you refuse to dump them out. Someone's standing there with good fruit, but you can't be wrong, because you're consumed with sinful pride. We're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of the whole show. I enjoy these discussions. I hope you do too. If you're a return member of the congregation, as most of you are, I guess you do. And I do appreciate you tuning in each and every week. And as always, again, I hope you get something out of it each and every week. I hope you do enjoy the rest of your week. And of course, as always, I hope to see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.